TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Welcome in another edition of Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore with you today. A lot of NBA playoff talk going on, but Dane, first I want to get thoughts on Gersan Rosas and the new hiring that the Wolves have made, because while it has been a little bit of time since they've actually made that hiring, it's been just under a week, that means that we haven't actually had an opportunity to talk about it, because they hired him, I think, last Friday, and now you and I are doing the podcast on Thursday, so it was kind of the perfect storm for us to just have no opportunity to talk about it whatsoever.
It felt like the most... like timing-wise, the most perfect. When all of the Jimmy Butler stuff hit, the Tibbs stuff. Like when Tibbs got fired, we were at the Wolves game on Sunday afternoon.
That was a long day.
I know. And then we both had to write something up real quick on it. And then we came in here at 9 or 10 or something and went on air. And this was normal.
The worst part about that was I had gotten back from Mexico that morning.
Yeah, I forgot
about that. Walked into Target Center with a suitcase and the security guy at the media check-in, and a lot of people walk in there with suitcases, mainly photographers, because that's how they carry their equipment, just to peel back the curtain a little bit here. So he opens up my suitcase because he has to check my bags, and there are swim trunks on the top. Right. He goes, that's not what I was expecting to see. I'm like, yeah, I was in Mexico this morning, man.
Right. This was normal. We got a Monday morning press conference. It's nice for our perspective to not need to be Friday night, okay, got to go write something real quick on it or record. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do you want to know from my perspective on Rosas?
Well, we have had the introductory press conference, so we got to talk to him a little bit. But what are your initial thoughts? Do you think it was a good hire? I know it's one that we can't fairly judge for a couple of years now, just because he has to, one, dig out of a hole, and two, then create what he wants to create. But do you think that they targeted the right guy? Are you happy with who they got?
Yeah, I think, well, the hole is important to acknowledge, and I think that's what the Wolves ownership looked at, was there is a hole here. They acknowledge that, and in my opinion, the best way to get out of that hole is a maximization of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at a lot of former coaches who come into executive roles or players, there is maybe even subconsciously a desire to bring in your type of players. Or, I mean, Tibbs went to the extreme, literally his old players.
Yes, as jokes have been made.
Right. But it's, I think when you have a more, an executive who comes from the player development side, a scout side, you understand the economics of being an executive, and that to maximize your product, you need to take advantage of everything. And in getting out of the hole, they need to make little, tiny, small steps over and over again. And that's going to be things as simple as, taking advantage of minimum contracts, using your two-way contracts, using the mid-level exception. With Tibbs, as an example, last year, is they had the mid-level exception, and you have Bielitsa, who you can bring back with bird rights. Mm-hmm. He was a restricted free agent. And they went out and they decided to use their mid-level exception on Anthony Tolliver, who's a fine player, but an approximation of Bielitsa.
Yeah.
You could have just brought Bielitsa back and then used the mid-level exception, I don't know, maybe on a shooting guard or something like that. But Tibbs wanted Anthony Tolliver because Anthony Tolliver comes from Stan Van Gundy's system, which was very similar to Tibbs's. So I have faith in Rosas, as I probably would have with, a Michael Winger or something, that it's an executive who's going to maximize what's here.
I do like that all of the things that you said need to be maximized in terms of minimum contracts and two-way deals and the mid-level exception are things that the Houston Rockets have kind of knocked out of the park.
Yeah.
And if you think about some of the guys they have on minimum deals, or some of the guys that were cast off other places that just didn't really seem to have a place in the league. Gerald Green was out of the league. The Milwaukee Bucks cut him after training camp in 2017, I think it was. Daniel House was a two-way player who gets significant minutes now. They've done like that. Kenneth Faried, who was rotting on the bench in Brooklyn.
Well, we were just talking about this in the Warriors Rockets series, and how the Warriors, they don't have a seventh, eighth, ninth man to be able to go to. And
it's crazy to me that their slogan is still strength in numbers, because they are so, in 2015 when that came out, that was the epitome of them. They had guys that could come off the bench like Leandro Barbosa, and they could outscore your bench and be better there than you. in addition to obviously having right. Steph and Clay and Draymond and Andre Iguodala and stuff like that. But now they just don't. They don't have a bench, especially with Andre Iguodala starting. Their bench is nothing.
And you compare it to Houston, who it's not like they have this robust bench to go to, but they found the Gerald Greens, the Houses, and those sort of guys that are proving to be important. And I think success in the NBA today, from an executive standpoint, it comes from doing all that and having maximizing all those things. And I have confidence that Rosas will pursue doing those things. Wallace, I mean, we can get into the high end things too.
Yeah.
His priorities are going to be, how do we turn Cat into the 20th best player in the NBA to the fifth best player in the NBA?
Yeah.
Like, that's the priority. He's going to be most focused on that and going out to acquire another star to put alongside Cat eventually. But in the meantime, your process to getting that second star is doing the small things right away.
Yeah.
And
what do you think those small things are?
I think it's the things I'm really looking at this summer are what he's able to do with the mid-level exception. I think you can get creative and end up getting like a couple of guys on like a 3-year deal that's like $4 million.
I think you have to get creative. I don't think that they have a choice at this point. If they're going to improve, it's going to have to be creatively done.
Right. And whereas like the more traditional, and I've talked about this before too, where you're like, well, what's the best player you can get with the $9 million mid-level?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think maybe Rosas would be like, can we get three players who are maybe on for a couple years that are like multiple darts to throw at the dartboard? I would be interested to see if they kind of go that path. And then I think Tyus Jones will be another one. If it gets up towards the mid-level, kind of that sort of market for Jones, I think Rosas might say no.
I'm really curious what his market's going to be this offseason.
Yeah,
I have no feel for that right now.
I think it's less. I really do. I just think he would straight up accept a $6 million a year deal with the Wolves. So my guess would be less there. But if I'm wrong there and Tyus's market is higher, I think you'll see Rosas step away from it. And then with Dario Saric, who's probably in the 10 to low teens in annual value, I don't think he'll do that. I don't think he'll give him an extension this summer. If you look at what they did in Houston, it was very rare that they ever pursued players who were kind of in that $8 to $18 million range.
Mm-hmm.
They really went like studs and duds.
Sure.
In a way. And,
but duds that worked with their studs.
Yeah. And the few times that they did pursue a guy in that middle range, it was due to a specific need. It was Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. And Ryan Anderson, you roll your eyes right there, which is, it's a bad deal now.
Yeah.
But you look back 2 years ago, or even just last season, and Anderson's ability to be able to shoot from 28 feet away from the hoop was huge in making Chris Paul and James Harden be able to be the best isolation players in the league.
Yeah.
Due to the space created. So I think that was there was a lot of thought that went into that. And same thing with Gordon. They needed a third isolator. Rosas, my assumption is that he will only pursue guys below the max if they really, really fit. And I think with Saric, we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
And with Tyus, we don't know that yet. So I highly doubt they overpay for either of those guys this summer.
Yeah, I just don't think that they can afford to.
Right.
Because they can't afford to miss at right. this point. His margin for error to dig out of this hole, if you're going to dig out of this hole and simultaneously be successful while doing so,
mm-hmm.
your margin for error is extremely tiny. You just don't have the room to make mistakes like that. You can't overpay for a guy like Tyus or a guy like Dario Saric, or you're just going to be further behind the eight ball.
He did say, we have at the press conference, that we have some questions to answer at the point guard position, which is just true. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Tyus is a free agent. Rose is a free agent.
Jared Bayless, too, which
yeah,
I know he's
right.
in all likelihood gone no matter
but
what,
an executive,
no matter who is coming in.
Yeah,
but
would say that.
It still has to be said.
It just, that to me seems like the place that they might get creative. And that might be me just talking that into existence, because I think that makes sense if you can find a way to move on from Jeff Teague. But I'm putting a pin in that mm-hmm. quote from him there. And I understand keeping Teague, but I understand, trying to find, aggressively trying to sell him if you can for something this offseason.
Yeah, and as it's been said before, there are worse things than having Jeff Teague as your starting point guard. And I do think that he'll have a bounce back year of sorts next year. He can't really be worse than he was this year with how many injuries he faced and just the time spent not on the floor. You have to expect that. And being in a contract year, you're going to get the best from him because he's going to want that one last contract before he's done.
I got a hypothetical trade for you.
Let's hear it.
Jeff Teague and the Wolves have the 42nd or 43rd pick in the draft.
From Miami.
From Miami.
Yeah.
Trade Jeff Teague and that for Dante Exum. Dante Exum has 2 years and $9.5 million left on his deal.
Can you trust Dante Exum to be on the floor, though? That's the thing.
What you could trust in Dante Exum is that he costs $10 million
That's true.
Less than Jeff Teague. That's my intrigue. I'm not a big Exum guy in that sense. He falls almost exactly in the age bubble. He's like 100 days older than Cat and 100 days younger than Wiggins. So it's just like, you know, like
putting what are the chances square of that?
I know. I looked it up.
Did you like type in days since and days until?
No, I had my little notebook there and I did a calendar and I added it all 30 days a month.
Dane Moore doing math.
Yeah, I love math. I think it's interesting, though. Like, you need to, if you're going to move Teague, it's got to be to a team who has some space. Like, Utah can absorb that extra $10 million in salary, whereas you try and trade them to Miami or Charlotte or something like that that's over the cap. They can't do that. You would need to find a team who has cap space and a desire for Jeff Teague, which you're starting to really squeeze the list
down.
Yeah,
your list of suitors is not exactly the longest it could be.
I'm
intrigued by that. I'll say that.
I don't hate it. There you go.
I mean, I'm like you. I'm not the biggest Dante Exum guy in the world. I think that the best ability is availability, and he's proven that he really doesn't have that throughout the course of his career. But if you can shed $10 million by doing that with really only the expense of a second-round pick, and maybe you catch something in Dante Exum. Maybe he finally puts it together and you have a serviceable player. That would be different, too.
Point guard position, Tyus Exum, I don't know. I mean, something like that.
Or, I mean, I think they could end up targeting a point guard in the draft, depending on where they fall.
Yeah, or you can take Exum and you can move him on again. Like, maybe somebody else is like, oh, we'll take Dante, you know, turn it into a three-team deal, and you're off Exum, you get off Exum completely.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is like, yeah, we'll pay $9 a year for Exum, then you've completely cut $19 million in salary for next season. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the markets are, but I think I've said this numerous times. People are like, oh, here's Dane talking about trading Jeff T again. I just think there's if you want to create some financial flexibility, Jeff, getting aggressive and creative, as you said, with Jeff Teague
that's the easiest way to do it because the Gorgui contract's going to be too difficult to move this summer. Mm-hmm. Not too difficult to move, but
harder.
Harder than Jeff Teague. Mm-hmm. And the Andrew Wiggins one is like 100 times that.
It's an exponential scale of difficulty.
Yeah, it's like, so there's the Jeff Teague on the bottom line, and then there's a sizable bump to Gorgui, and then like that times 10. To where Andrew's at. It's just that much harder.
You don't think he was given like lip service when he talked about, you know, kind of empowering Andrew? And
no, I don't. And partially because when he talks about Carl being a franchise player, he never mentioned Andrew in that in that discussion.
And he's like, and we have other talented pieces.
Yes, like lumping Andrew into the other category was something that is, one, incredibly true.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as everyone's been saying, but to hear it from a powerful voice within the organization on the record, I think speaks a little bit to where they realize they're at.
Whereas Tibbs, it didn't. He put them together. Mm-hmm. And I've long...
And even Ryan has, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, and again, as you said, just true.
And when you're the coach, I also understand it differently because if you're the coach, you have to be able to play to your locker room, like the I believe in you part. But if you're the coach, you can, and if someone comes complaining to you about what an executive says, you can still say, I've got your back, and that's what matters. Like, you can play that to try and have that trust in your locker room. It matters more for Ryan or Tibbs to have Andrew's back than it does Rosas, I think.
Right. I was in New York last weekend, and I'm walking by. I went into the NBA store, like New York City NBA store. And in there, they have 30 mannequins wearing the jerseys of the teams. And it's like, you know, every team, it's their best player. It's like Embiid, whatever, Devin Booker.
LeBron.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, yeah.
And I go in there, and it's Andrew Wiggins.
Is it the highest paid player? Are you sure it's not the highest paid player?
I would need to go open up a spreadsheet. But I was like, that was interesting to me. And then I went through, looked through the store for any other like Timberwolves stuff. No Karl Anthony Towns stuff in anywhere
really?
In the massive.
Yeah. See, even in the Wolves team shop inside Target Center, there is not a whole bunch of Andrew Wiggins stuff. Like
Andrew Wiggins stuff. Yeah,
there might be more. There might be more Robert Covington stuff.
Well, as I think we would both agree, there should be. He's the second best player.
You're not going to catch an argument from me there.
I think Kat has. It's just interesting to me that Kat isn't very popular around the league, and I think part of it has to do with the fact that he's been by Tibbs kind of put into that same.
He gets dragged down.
It's like Towns and Wiggins. And you're like, well, that's not that good because Anvil and pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
He's like the balloon that's trying to float up there, and he's got a weight just tying him down, and he can't fly away.
There we go. We got all the metaphors, analogies,
like
whatever.
Yeah, but that's what it's been forever, and I'm excited to see that it looks like that's changing.
Well, just from a marketing standpoint, it makes sense. You want to market your best player. You want him to
and you
feel
have
like
a really good best player.
Exactly.
You've got a really, really good best player.
Yeah. So I think you split that up and you say, Kat's our guy. And then we have, I get being like, Andrew's one of our best secondary players. Like, say that, but acknowledge that that's in the group with Saric and Covington and those guys. And it's not with your all NBA center.
I also did like the fact that he acknowledged that there still is upside in Andrew, but he hasn't hit it.
Yeah.
Like he acknowledged that that's a real thing because Andrew still does have upside. Crazier things have happened in the NBA than him turning it around. Now, he'll never be a star player in the NBA, I don't believe at least, but he can be a guy that stars in his role, which he also hasn't done.
I just think Rosas is really... He just really wants to turn Andrew Wiggins into like a $10 million a year player, like that value of player. And that makes sense. It doesn't cost you anything to work with Wiggins to make him that. I think a lot of people are seeing, Rosas put this faith behind him and are like, oh, Rosas believes he can be a max player. Like, what?
I don't think that.
I don't think he does. I think what he's saying is it would help us a lot if Andrew became they say like $9 million is the average salary in the league. If he can be like an average player, like that's.
Let me ask you this: if Andrew were on the open market this summer,
I think it'd be more than you think, man.
What do you think it is?
So,
many teams are interested? Because not every team in the they're not like
I don't know. It's so
like hard. Kevin Durant is going to be an unrestricted free agent when he declines his player option with the Warriors this summer, and every single team now 99% of them are not going to have a chance,
right?
But every single team has interest.
Sure,
every single team would not have interest in Andrew Wiggins.
I remember. I don't think you and I can be objective on this. Just
but
I
think
much.
That's a very true thing.
I do too. I remember talking to a bunch of people at Summer League last year, and then. Because it was very clear 12 months ago that this Andrew Wiggins contract was an issue. It's that's only become more clear now. But talking to them then, and they're like, a team like Phoenix goes and gets them. They drafted Mikal Bridges. You don't think they'd rather have Andrew Wiggins and they're not like maximizing their money right now. There's there's bad teams out there that have cap space that are like, we will overpay. What his value is.
But what's his value and what's that overpay look like?
I think it's similar to like what Zach LaVine got. He was like 19. I think that's bad. I'm not saying that's what I would do. I bet you if he was out there, he's getting something like a 470 deal from somebody.
That's still a lot of money for his production, especially coming off the... saying.
I agree.
But coming off the year he just had...
The thing is Zach LaVine got that... coming off an ACL.
But
at least
he had an excuse. He
was coming off an ACL.
Andrew's been healthy for his whole career.
I could see people thinking I'm just an idiot right now. So this is not what I would do. I'm saying there's a Chicago Bulls out there, or there's the Phoenix Suns who go, well, we're not getting KD. We're not getting anyone. And here we are. We have $17 million left in cap space. What are we going to do? Like bring in another Trevor Ariza? For 1 year, who's 34? No, let's try and get Andrew Wiggins. It wouldn't be smart, but I think somebody would do it.
Yeah, you're probably right. I would hate for that to be a team that I was running. I would hate to do that. That would be miserable. That's a fireable offense. Yeah. All right, I want to move on to the playoffs.
What number do you think it is?
I think it's
like 12 or something.
Yeah, right around 12.
And maybe, I mean, I don't know.
I was gonna say 11, so maybe a little bit under 12, but in that ballpark.
Which is, what did we just say before this? It'd be great if Andrew Wiggins became a $10 million.
It would be.
So I don't know.
Because he's been a no-million dollar a year player.
It's just important, I think, that for us or for anyone to, we don't need to give Andrew Wiggins a clean slate. We need to, like, it needs to be, if he's going to be here for the next couple of years, we got to kind of be like, is there something else you can be? We need to see that. We need to allow that to happen. And if he goes the first 30 games of the season again, a new coach that your boy's with, a new GM who's empowering you, and you have a 48% true shooting percentage, like, then, like, by all means, like, go crazy. I just, I think,
by all means,
I think, you know, just roll with it, because nothing else is going to happen. It's just going to make your experience unenjoyable. Like, I don't think Andrew Wiggins is good.
No, he's not. He's not a good basketball player.
I don't. Like,
I have friends back home that don't watch the Wolves regularly, and I understand that, because why would you?
Dude, I have friends in Minneapolis who love basketball who don't watch the Wolves regularly. So
when I told them at certain points this season that I thought Luol Deng was a better basketball player than Andrew Wiggins, not a soul believed me. It was true, though. Like, that's the thing.
It was in that month, it was certainly true.
Like, Luol Deng played 22 games this year, and he gave you more than Andrew Wiggins did.
Yeah, it's... Dude, there's so many crazy Wiggins stats of, like...
Like, his win shares for the amount of time that he played?
There's only two other players in NBA history prior to this season who tallied less than one win share and played over 2,500 minutes. A win share is a cumulative statistic.
Yes.
So you get more points towards it the more minutes you play. So he played 2,500 minutes, a ton. Only two players have ever got under 1.0 win shares in a season.
Mm-hmm.
Desmond Mason and Antoine Walker. Ever.
That's so bad.
And I don't know, like, you know, hate on that stat. That's fine. But, like, Wiggins was the first player since 2015-16 to take 16 shots per game and have a true shooting percentage under 50%. Like, it's so bad. He's the first player since Josh Smith in 2013-14 to take 1,200 shots and score less than 1,400 points.
These stats are unbelievable.
Yeah. Move on.
All right, what playoff series do you want to talk about first? I want to talk about two of them. I want to talk about Boston, Milwaukee, Houston, Golden State. You pick which one we go with first.
Wait, well, so did you pick Boston?
Yes, I did.
Yes, there we go.
I got
to put that in there. You know, you talk to so many different people, you're like, wait, who picked what?
I had Boston in six, and I felt real good after game one.
Oh, I felt, I think we, because I think you and I were talking about, and I was like, super Milwaukee.
Well, we recorded, and then I came in. We recorded the day of game two.
Yeah, which was after game one, where I was like, because I was like 85% Milwaukee wins the series, and you were more like 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, maybe I was a little ahead of myself. But I don't know, Milwaukee looked great. Boston's just...
I think we learned a lot about Kyrie Irving.
I think we're doing Boston-Milwaukee.
Yeah, we might as well. So I think we learned that. And what was eye-opening to me, and I thought about this last night, I saw it somewhere on Twitter, and I forget who initially brought it up, so I can't give any credit because I don't remember. So forgive me. But this was the first time in the playoffs that Kyrie Irving has been the focal point of a team. Because when he was in Cleveland, he was the number two guy on LeBron's team, as literally any other player in the NBA would have been, right? So this was the first time he had his own team, and he was the focal point for a defense to focus on for seven straight games. Well, not seven straight games, because it only went five, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
In a best of seven series, and he couldn't do anything against Milwaukee.
But the first game he did.
But after that,
he relied on his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said this when we were talking. I go, there's going to hit a point where he goes, he becomes frustrated, a lead evaporates or they fall behind, and he goes, you know what? I'm going to stop hitting Al Horford on the pop.
Yeah,
because I don't think that that's actually better. But when they did it, they could have beaten Milwaukee if they kept pounding the rock of the smart team basketball. Milwaukee is not some juggernaut.
No.
They're not the Warriors.
No,
they
were not.
Beatable. Even, I mean, I said 85%.
I mean, you look at the first game, they lost by 20, and it was not as close as the score.
Yes, I agree. And credit for the way that Milwaukee adapted to that.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to make this about, like, oh, Boston's such a disappointment, which they are. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But Milwaukee does deserve a ton of credit for what they've done and what they did in that series. But I also think that Boston is the biggest disappointment in a basketball team I can remember for quite some time.
So to your he was the main guy thing, like you got to be thinking if you're going out to acquire Kyrie Irving this summer, which a lot of teams would understandably want to do. Like, if you're Brooklyn, you're probably only getting Kyrie. You're not getting Kyrie and somebody else.
Correct.
So how attractive is it to be like, yeah, we want to bring Kyrie in and have him be our one? Our one, and like have Caris LeVert be two, or like whatever.
And D'Angelo Russell's gone at that point, I would assume.
Probably. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if you can finesse. Even that, though, like, Kyrie's your one. Kyrie's your one. If you're with D'Angelo, like, they go tiny. I don't know. But just, like, from that standpoint of, like, how, I don't know if I'm a GM, if I'm really excited about bringing in Kyrie unless I know he's clearly the two. If he's the Kyrie to the LeBron in Cleveland. It just, if your goal is a championship, I don't think Kyrie Irving is as good as Kevin Durant says Kyrie Irving is. He's one of the King Hoopers or whatever he said with Bill Simmons. Like, Kyrie Irving is a phenomenal basketball player.
He's a magnificent basketball player, but he's not. And I also, let me say this. I hate the whole, best player in a championship team thing because there have been like six of those in the last decade. Like, it's been Kobe twice. It's been Kawhi Leonard once. It's been Steph Curry once. It's been Kevin Durant twice. It's been LeBron three times. And it's been Dirk once. That's it. Like, that's really super, super elite category. And I don't think that that's an insult that Kyrie's not in there, because he's not. No, Kyrie, but no one else has proven they are.
It's like Kyrie falls into the like same thing you hope with Kat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he kind of gets you there to a point, and then you have to bring in another at least equal.
Yeah.
To go to a, even just go to a championship.
Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Winning a title is hard.
As Rosa says, in a league that's getting smarter and smarter, like there aren't, the NBA is not going to have the Ted Stepians anymore. Like those sort of, they're just like those inefficiencies of managing a team. There's not going to be super terrible teams anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or like super by terribly.
Accident.
Yeah.
By accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There still will be super terrible teams, but they won't be done
or
by
less,
accident.
At least less. Like, at some point, and some people might argue with the Timberwolves, is that, like, you know, your management or ownership can really hinder you from ever getting there. But I just think we're in a place where the people constructing the rosters are so much smarter than they ever have been before.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, if I'm Brooklyn, I'm not, like, pumped if it's like, all right, we got Kyrie, and now, and we kind of, like, hit the gas really hard, and here we are, we're, like, or we're ready to compete, and you're like, but we're actually not that
good.
But
who are you pumped about if you're Brooklyn? Because I'm not pumped about Tobias Harris either.
Dude, it's just take more time. Just take more time if you're Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's not like sexy, but like,
it's not.
You know, it just, you gotta wait for the right time to bite. And that's why I remember Sam Hinkie at Sloan a year ago was talking about the Celtics going to trade for Kyrie. And he goes, I just wonder if they went for their star too early.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to that.
I also wonder what they would look like if they did make that trade. I wonder what they would have looked like this year. Because that was a team that won, 54 games, I want to say, in 2017 when they got the one seed in the Eastern Conference? Now, granted, they did that because they tried really hard all year to do that, and they cared about winning in the regular season, and the Cavs didn't for the most part that year.
Yeah.
But I wonder what they would look like if you still had Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and maybe, I mean, Colin Sexton was the guy selected with the pick that they had from Brooklyn by Cleveland. I don't know if they take him or someone else, but I wonder what they look like there.
It's, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I really think and starting to get almost brushed over, I don't think the plan was bad by Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens. It's just it kind of got ruined by Gordon Hayward getting hurt.
Oh, absolutely. Because
maybe then maybe it's like Kyrie and Hayward are like peers. Because when Hayward went to Boston, you could argue he was still, like, he had a little bit higher to even go than where he was at Utah.
Sure.
Like, he was at 90% of what he could become.
Mm-hmm.
And then
That's
if he fair. Hits that 100, it's like him, and he's really close to Kyrie, can do things differently than Kyrie.
And you could say
Kyrie
still had room to grow, too.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that.
Because Kyrie was what?
Kyrie feels so old, too.
He was 25, I think. 24, 25 when he got traded. Yeah. So it's not as if they were trading for an already in your prime 27, 28-year-old Kyrie Irving. There was very, especially after being the number two, there was plenty of reason to think that the best basketball in Kyrie's career was yet to come.
Right. He just turned 27.
So that means he would have been 25 when he was acquired by the...
Really young, yeah.
Actually, him and Hayward have the same birthday. March,
really?
Yeah, I believe it is March 23rd.
It is. I'm looking at it. Shout out. It's my brother's birthday, too.
It's my mother's birthday.
Wow, this is weird. All the good people.
Crazy. But yeah, it's like there was reason to believe that the best was yet to come for both Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. So yeah, you do that 10 out of 10 times if you're Boston. I don't think that the plan was a bad plan by any stretch of the imagination. I think that the execution just failed.
Right, which happens.
It happens
There's
all the time. Like, oh, absolutely. All right, let's flip over to the other series because
I want to. Is the other series going to be Golden State Houston?
Yes, is that okay?
Yeah. I just want to ask you, assuming it's Toronto, you have Toronto over Milwaukee still?
Yeah, I picked Toronto to go to
the
finals.
What you always say.
Well, I did in August.
How has your perception not evolve over time? I'm not saying it's wrong
because Kawhi Leonard's a bad man.
Okay, so it's because Kawhi.
Because Kawhi,
your pick is Toronto because Kawhi's awesome, not because you picked Toronto in September.
Picking Toronto in September has given me far less reason to change.
All right.
Like, if I had not, maybe I'd be wavering a little bit because Milwaukee's been really good and they were really impressive against Boston. But if I have ridden the Toronto bandwagon this far and Kawhi Leonard has looked like the best player in basketball during the playoffs, especially now with Durant going down.
You don't have them winning the championship, though.
No, I have.
I did a podcast last night where the guy was telling me that he's had Toronto winning the championship all year and that I'm an idiot for
with Golden State, with the Kevin Durant situation, that kind of throws a wrench in everything because you just now everyone that picked the Warriors to win the title 3 years ago, like me, like that's it's hard to remember that, oh, well, they might not have their best player.
I love an NBA, like credit to the Warriors for being dominant, but I love an NBA where we can go into the playoffs each year and give four teams a 10% chance of winning the championship.
Sure.
And we haven't had that in many years.
I mean, the last finals without LeBron were 2010.
Yeah. Like
the last finals without the Warriors were 2014.
Because it's been like betting lines. It's been Warriors every year have been over 50%.
Well,
like,
the Warriors today. So not the whole year. Last year, I think, and shout out to Ben Axelrod on Twitter because he brought this to my attention earlier when I, like, the updated lines to win the title were, they came out today.
This and is post KD leg fell off.
This was at 1:41 this afternoon Central Time.
Okay.
The Warriors are plus 130 to win the title. Still the best odds of anyone in the league.
Plus, but it's plus now.
And this is the first time it's been plus. From that, like, 12 hours after the Warriors lost Game 5 against Houston before we knew how bad Chris Paul's hamstring was. It was plus in that 12-hour window and then went back to minus. And before that, I bet you the last time they were plus money was...
Which, if people don't know what that means, now what Vegas is saying is the smart bet is to take the field over the Warriors.
And prior to that 12-hour period last year, I would bet that the last time they were plus money to win the title was on July 3rd, 2016.
Yeah.
Before they got KD.
Even that, I remember I've had this conversation like over the course of 4 years. And my one friend texts me, he's like, dude, why is it even money to pick the Warriors? And this will be like in the middle of the season, like at the All-Star break. And he's like, so I can get even money on the Warriors winning the championship right now. I'm like, yeah, you should take that bet.
Yeah.
And so, okay, my question for you is right now, we have all this many question marks surrounding KD. I think our assumption is he's out for the rest of the series. Are you taking the Warriors or the field?
Yes, and that's him being out for the rest of the series is not an assumption. That is truth.
That is
he will not play another game against the Houston Rockets this season.
Right.
He is
reassessed
done
in
playing.
A week.
Yes, and truthfully, even if they do beat Houston, it's likely that he misses one or two games of the Western Conference Finals just because of when the dates would fall. So he'll be reevaluated a week from today, and a week from today, as we record this on Thursday, is game two of the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it lends you to believe he'll probably miss game one, I would think.
So Warriors or the field right now?
This is tough. I would have to
go field.
I have
to go field. Bet. We're betting. We got.
I have
something.
To go field, and I did pick. I will bet I picked the Rockets to win
dinner
in
and a
six.
Beer. I will take the Warriors.
That's fine. Still. All right, we'll do that. I mean, it's, but I wouldn't be stunned at all.
No, it's a fair bet. I think it's. This is the point in time where I haven't thought for so long. I've said the obvious money is on the Warriors,
yeah.
versus the field, like Tiger back in the day,
yeah,
you know. Cool. And now it changes. It changes to a fair bet, in my opinion. Now some people might be like, no way, like field easy. I'm saying it.
Oh, 50, I'm not 52. Saying field easy at all. Right. I am. I would.
We're lined up, but we're.
We'll just take different
bet.
Sides for the sake of this. I'm not saying like, oh, I'd be. There's no way they have a chance. Like none yeah. of that. Like if on June 12th or whatever day, the Warriors are holding up the Larry O'Brien Trophy, I'm like, that's right, no right, surprise right. to me. But if the Raptors or the Bucks or even the Rockets do, I'd be like. That's not really a surprise to me either.
So second most likely, in your opinion, is?
I have to say the Raptors, don't
Ooh.
I?
I think I go Rockets.
Again, I'm not sure, because here's my concern with the Rockets, is that they are so built to beat Golden State, I don't know how built they are to beat everyone else. Like, they have.
They're so built to beat the best team?
But they're built to beat their style, and not everyone else has that style. You know, like
Raptors do.
Kind of. They don't have.
They don't have the shooters.
Yeah,
but they have
don't
the
have
isolators.
The they have the isolators. They don't have the shooters.
Like they have the. I don't know.
But that's also partly been their style. Like the Kevin Durant kind of helps the Rockets, as strange as that is, because they want to force them into playing isolation basketball, and Steph and Clay and Draymond don't want to do that. But Kevin Durant's like, sign me up. So that's part of it.
I want to be signed up for that too.
Steph and Clay don't.
I don't. What I don't know is Bucks Raptors. Like that's.
I can't wait for that series. But
we
again,
don't know. Like we don't have experience of that.
Now watch Philadelphia come back and win.
I'm not ruling that out either.
No, playoffs neither rule. Am I. Yeah, the playoffs have been awesome, and I'm not like I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucks win the title. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Toronto. Nothing at this point would surprise me the rest of the way, and I really think that that's awesome because we haven't had that. Like last year, it was.
It stinks that KD got hurt,
absolutely,
but the odds shaking out to something that more like resembles the NFL playoffs, that's cool.
Yeah, and we haven't had that for so long.
Yeah.
Like last year it was, even last year when the Cavs were down 3-2 to Boston and the Rockets led Golden State 3-2, it was kind of like, I'd be surprised if it's not Cavs-Warriors in the finals. Like, I would still be surprised. I'm not counting out LeBron here, and I'm not counting out the Warriors here,
right.
especially after Chris Paul's injury.
The last time it wasn't that, you were in high school.
The last time it was not Cavs-Warriors?
Yeah, or that
I would have been in college. I would have been in college the last time it wasn't that, because I was in college when LeBron went back to Cleveland. I was entering my junior year of college.
But what'd you say about 2000? Oh, LeBron was 2010. Last time LeBron wasn't in.
Last time it wasn't Cavs Warriors.
Yeah,
was,
I got my dates
was
screwed
Heat,
up.
Spurs in 2014.
Yeah,
but it's been the same thing every year. I am excited that it's going to be different.
Right?
Do you think, how's your trust level now in Golden State without KD against Houston?
Well, higher than yours, I guess.
Sure.
I mean, but it's I still think you have. A lot of great weapons in Golden State there. And as you just said, I don't agree that they're better without or that KD helps them, but the thrust of what you're saying is that the Warriors can still play really well without him.
Absolutely.
And we saw that in the fourth quarter last night. Some. I'm concerned about their depth. It would be interesting if they had this no KD but still had Boogie.
Yeah,
you know, how does that kind? Because they could use another player.
Bodies, they just need available bodies at this point.
That's
too.
What I'm concerned about with this Warriors. If you got no KD, you got no Boogie, then you got. I mean, you got to get something out of Sean Livingston, and he's been bad.
He was good last night for the most part, but he has just not been the Sean Livingston that we've seen over
and
the past
Iggy's
4 years.
And Iggy's been great in these playoffs.
Oh, he looks like he's 25 again. It's remarkable. He looks like he's 10 years younger.
He also. Historically kind of been a ticking time bomb of just like
in 2016 it was the back. There was a pass in, I don't remember what game it was, game 5, 6, or 7, I think Steph threw him a pass that was like kind of at his ankles, and he looked like he could not walk when he was trying to pick up the ball. Like he just he looked like his back didn't want to cooperate with him and he couldn't walk.
But he's been getting like he's looked like a dunker spot center where they're just dropping it off to him and he's like drop step huge dunk. Like
is he still leading the playoffs in dunks?
Probably.
Because I know he was for a while. I don't know. I'm not keeping track of that stat. Forgive me. But I know he was for a while, and I'm not sure if he still is. But that's
remarkable. He led the league in field goal percentage in the restricted area during the regular season.
Isn't that remarkable?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You would think that would be DeAndre Jordan.
Or Clint Capella. Or
I mean, granted, he's getting a lot of wide open ones there. Like layups.
That's why,
clean dunks. But still, if they're able to do that, they can get enough offense. Still, I believe they can still find enough offense to counteract.
How much does Kevin Durant's absence against Houston now on the other side of the floor affect them? Because Kevin Durant did a solid job against James Harden. It was another body. Kevin Durant's
one of the best defenders.
Yeah, he's a 7-foot freak. Like, let's call him what he is. He's a 7-foot freak that can absolutely defend. And they're going to be missing that. I'm curious now what we're going to see.
I point to Iggy again. There is critical, you know.
Oh, and
you
lose Iggy at all. Critical with Kevin Durant on the floor. And now without that other guy there, he becomes even more critical. And it's going to be more minutes for guys like Kevon Looney. And I'm not sure that the Rockets can't just play him off the floor.
Right.
Like they can't play Andrew Bogut in this series because Houston will just call up Clint Capella for a 1-5 pick and roll every time. And that's going to be that. He's just going to get cooked.
Right. They still have Klay Thompson, who's an excellent defender. Draymond Green, excellent. Iggy, as right now, excellent. Mm-hmm. You obviously miss a lot on both ends without Kevin Durant, but there is no team in NBA history more uniquely set up to withstand an injury to the best player in the NBA.
Oh, you mean the core of a team that won 73 games isn't still in okay shape?
But as we said, different bench. That 73 team was different, younger, like across the board. That you know that matters. Draymond. That's been my biggest surprise, I think, in watching Golden State in the playoffs is that he hasn't been a problem. I thought that there'd be games where he's a problem, and he is so...
In terms of...
Just, you know, it seems...
Because
him,
when you say problem in Draymond Green, that can go a lot of different ways.
No, as a basketball player, as like a shooter, an offensive... Like, there were so many times during the season where you would watch the Warriors, you'd be like, I don't know if that guy's helping them right now.
Well, he was so out of shape all year. He didn't start getting it, and I forget who wrote the story. It might have been The Athletic, where
he lost 24 pounds.
Yeah,
or something.
Bob Myers called him into his office, and he's like, "You need to lose weight." And Draymond's like, "Oh, I know. I've got this whole plan. We're starting March 6th. I'm going to cut a ton of weight. I'm going to look great in the playoffs." And to his credit, he did. Like that's what it's been. He looks like a real basketball player. He didn't quite look like during the regular season.
It just would like deflate possessions when he would catch the ball so wide open. On the top of the key. And then he's like, which I get, like, don't shoot that if you're passing the ball to Clay. But sometimes he'd be so wide open, like above the break, and he'd be like, I don't want to shoot this. And he kicks it to Andrew Bogut, who's just like standing up there too, also left wide open.
Yeah.
His ability to willingly take threes now and to just get the ball zipping around in the way, in the energy that he can bring there, that's been huge, I think, for their offense. And defensively, he's a beast.
I think that he's going to have to hit shots, and the strategy defensively against the Warriors has always been you have to stick with Steph, you have to stick with Clay, but you can leave Draymond open. And at points back in 2016, something the Cavs did, they just, if Harrison Barnes was going to beat them, Harrison Barnes was going to beat them, and Harrison Barnes couldn't beat them. But when Kevin Durant replaces Harrison Barnes, you can't do that. That becomes impossible to do. But now with neither of them, it really lends the question, like, can Jonas Jerebko beat you?
Yeah.
And he had no problem taking threes last night when he checked in for Kevin Durant. He filled that Kevin Durant role. He thought he was Kevin Durant for a little bit. He was just chucking.
He was. I actually like Jerebko, but
not in
as
that
Kevin
role.
Durant.
Yeah. I think he's a serviceable player, but he's not Kevin Durant.
No, it's I can't wait for game 6 and 7. And then the thing is, you go into the playoffs and you're like, all right, that's gonna be the finals, and then whatever, the rest is just gonna kind of be gravy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now it's like I'm excited for game 6 and 7, and I'm excited for the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals, whether it's Houston or Golden State, because there's at least a lingering doubt that those teams can get knocked off.
Well, and the thing that bothers me is so many anti-NBA people, and I'm not, oh, please like my sport guy. Like, I don't care. You can watch it. You cannot watch it. Yeah. I really don't care. But so many people are, oh, I know who's going to win. Why would I watch? I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
We're sitting here.
Oh, you know
what?
Hey, if you do, bet it.
Yeah,
it's
make
legal.
Money.
It's legal. Go do it.
Like, we're sitting here on May 9th, and you and I both, I mean, we have.
Vegas is literally telling you it's more likely that somebody not named Golden State wins the championship. If you disagree with that, go make money.
Yeah.
Go do it.
Go make money. It's it's crazy.
I have those friends, too.
Oh, it doesn't annoy. It probably annoys me a little bit more than it should, just because I know it's inaccurate.
Well, and you know what? And even if Golden State does win it all or was going to roll, the NBA's still been in. These playoffs have been awesome. The Portland OKC series, the Portland Denver series has been sweet. Toronto, Philly. I mean, there's so much good along the way. Do you like basketball? That person who's saying that to you doesn't like basketball then.
No, not enough.
That's what I'm because.
Well, a lot of them are also casual LeBron fans, and LeBron's not in Cleveland anymore, and they're
bitter.
Yeah. Oh, I have so many bitter friends about that. But also, the Lakers really don't deserve LeBron after the way they've handled this coaching search. It is an atrocity.
I'm glad we've just not talked about it.
Well, I know, but also, like, how do you screw this up that bad? Because that's what they've done. Even like, you don't have to be high on Ty Lue as a coach, but the process of it is so flawed. It's been a joke what that franchise has turned into. Ugh.
And it just gets so public, too. It's like, can you protect anything? Like, just
it's the world we live in.
Yeah, I don't know. Some
anything else from you today?
We kind of hit.
I don't want to talk too much about the other two series because both those games are tonight. By the time you're listening, they're probably over. Both those series could be over by the time you listen to this. So I really don't want to dive too deep into Portland.
Yeah,
and
I'll just
Denver
say
and
impressed
Philly.
With Denver hitting their stride as
they
go.
Yeah, me too. Jamal Murray's been awesome. I can't believe
would look good in a Timberwolves jersey. Yeah.
Well, you mean Chris Dunn didn't? I can't believe Jokic played 63 minutes, was it, or 65 minutes?
65, yeah.
I can't believe he did that. I cannot believe he played that many minutes in a game. That's remarkable.
It's like, it's so hard to play basketball for that long.
Just
it's so hard.
Go to the gym and run, like, really hard for 3 hours, because that's essentially what that is. It's been crazy.
I played in, like, a basketball tournament, like, 2 years ago. That was 4 games in one day.
Oof.
And I was like, oh my God.
And that's not the NBA, Dane.
No, it was not the NBA, but I'm now sure I could not play in the NBA.
Only for that reason. Only for that reason. It's not, nothing to do with talent.
If you need like a 6'2" power forward, I got you.
6'2" power forward. I don't think that there's too much of a demand for that in the league right
PJ
now.
PJ Tucker, he's playing center for
he's
the Rockets.
He's like 6'6". There's a big difference there.
He's a little stronger than me,
PJ
too.
Tucker probably lifts more weights than you do, Dane.
Probably a little bit.
All right, we'll be back next week on Raised by Wolves. Thanks to Dane Moore for doing this. Had a lot of fun this week. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you consume your media. We're there. Be sure to download the Score North app. Give us a 5-star review, and we'll talk to you next time.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.